This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule for Monday, May 19. I'm Phil Picardi. Coming up, details about the recently completed legislative session and its winners and losers, a shortage of construction workers, and the Timberwolves may soon be loveless. First, authorities are searching the Maple Grove home of a girl who disappeared in 1989. Amy Sue Poniak was 13 years old when she was reported missing from an Osseo gas station where she was waiting in a car for her father. Amy's mother, Susan Poniak, says she's glad to see authorities are still taking her daughter's disappearance seriously. She says police initially suspected Amy might have run away, although Poniak says her daughter was happy at home.
She was looking forward to go to school. She planned a shopping list because that evening her and I were going to go out shopping. She had made a list of school supplies and clothes that she wanted to buy. There had been no arguments. We were in a peaceful time.
Poniak called the search a start in the right direction. Police won't say what they're looking for or what prompted the new search. They say they have no suspects at this time. Fewer Minnesotans were behind on residential mortgage payments in the first quarter of this year. Martin Moylan reports.
At the end of March, 3.8% of mortgages on single-family Minnesota homes were at least one payment past due. That was down from about 4.5% in the final 3 months of last year. The delinquency rate includes first mortgages that are past due, but not those in the process of foreclosure. The Mortgage Bankers Association, which released the statistics, says the drop is typical. Delinquency rates normally fall from the end of 1 year to the first quarter of the next. At the end of March, lenders were starting foreclosure proceedings on about 0.25% of Minnesota mortgages. Overall, 1% were somewhere in the foreclosure process. Nationally, Minnesota ranked 44th among the states in delinquencies and 41st in new foreclosures. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Tuition for undergraduates at Minnesota State colleges and universities will remain frozen next year. Alex Friedrich has more.
On Wednesday, trustees will review a proposed operating budget of about $1.8 billion. Chief Financial Officer Laura King says because state support will remain steady, the system can hold tuition flat. It expects to hold student fee increases to less than 1%.
We're really committed to the board's affordability agenda and have worked really hard in this budget to do everything we can to limit the cost increases to students.
King estimated average room and board increases to be about 3%, but she said tuition levels for graduate students are not yet set. Trustees are expected to approve the budget in June. Alex Friedrich, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Scientists with the National Park Service begin an annual survey today of bald eagle nests along the Mississippi River. Here's Elizabeth Dunbar.
The survey began in 2006. This week, scientists hope to gather blood and feather samples from 49 nests in the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area. Eaglets that can't fly yet are tested for contaminants like lead, mercury, and perfluorinated chemicals that might be in the fish they eat. Katie Nyberg directs the Mississippi Fund, a nonprofit that supports the efforts. She says the bald eagles can tell us a lot about pollution along the river.
We're really using them because they're at the top of the food chain. And so they just happen to be a great study subject to monitor these pollutants that tend to affect animals and humans throughout the environment.
In the coming weeks, the National Park Service will also sample eaglets along the St. Croix River and on Lake Superior's Apostle Islands. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Republican candidate who lost the endorsement contest for the 1st District Congressional seat has reversed himself and is now challenging the endorsed candidate for the nomination. Matt Sepik reports.
Last month, delegates to the GOP district convention in Albert Lea endorsed Aaron Miller to take on four-term incumbent DFLer Tim Walz in November. At the time, Jim Hagedorn said he'd abide by the endorsement and not run against Miller in a primary. But Hagedorn now says he's re-entering the race because Miller isn't campaigning hard enough. Miller denies the accusation.
It's a selfish act on his part, and he was looking for any reason that he could to get back in the race, and it's disappointing because we were a unified party coming out of the convention.
Miller, who works for a biotech firm, drew national attention when he complained his daughter was being taught evolution in school. Miller says he was illustrating government overreach and says he believes humans evolved with divine intervention. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
State lawmakers are back in their districts today after finishing the 2014 legislative session on Friday. Every seat in the 134-seat Minnesota House is up for re-election this year. And lawmakers are already crafting their talking points to voters. Democrats say one-party rule helped deliver key agenda items for Minnesota, but Republicans say that one-party rule resulted in DFL overreach. Tom Scheck reports.
When political handicappers scanned the election results this November, one candidate they'll keep an eye on is DFL Representative Tim Faust of Hinckley. Faust was first elected when Democrats rode in on a political wave in 2006 and served until a Republican wave helped the GOP reclaim the majority in 2010. In 2012, Faust again won his seat when Democrats retook both chambers of the legislature. Faust knows he's one of the prime targets for Republicans who are looking to reclaim the majority.
My district is a swing district. It's significantly better than it was in 6, 8, and 10, but it still isn't a safe district.
Even so, Faust says he's confident voters in his district will be happy with the work the legislature did over the past 2 years. For example, Faust says they balanced the state's budget, raised the minimum wage, spent more money on education, and tried to reduce property taxes. He also said passing a public works construction bill that spends more than $1 billion will help put unemployed construction workers in his district back on the job.
You'd have to go back an awful long ways to find a legislature and a governor that in 2 years got as much done as we did.
Governor Dayton and DFL legislative leaders will make that same case to voters. DFL House Speaker Paul Thiessen says Democrats delivered on a pledge to pay for all-day kindergarten, repay the state's debt to school districts, and deliver property tax relief to homeowners, businesses, and farmers.
It was focusing in again on delivering on some pretty big things for middle-class Minnesota families. And I hope that they're looking at the 2 years that we accomplished here. And if you look at the 2 years, I think people are going to look back in the session in the future and say it was one of the most productive biennia that we've had in a long time, in a generation even.
But Republicans look at the same 2 years and say the results were not good.
Single-party control with Democrats controlling all of state government hasn't served Minnesotans well.
Republican House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd says Democrats raised taxes $2.1 billion last year. And even though they cut taxes by $550 million this year, Dowd says Democrats were too focused on spending. He said he would have preferred a larger tax cut given the $2.1 billion budget surplus.
Minnesota families haven't seen the full impact of the economic recovery. The state has seen a small budget surplus because we were pretty disciplined in not increasing spending over the last couple of years. But unfortunately, Minnesota families haven't seen that.
The legislature also addressed several hot-button issues over the past 2 years. Same-sex marriage became legal in the state in August of last year, and the House and Senate sent Governor Dayton a bill that would legalize some forms of medical marijuana. Republicans didn't focus their criticism on those two issues, but instead are sticking to the economy, government spending, and jobs. GOP Senate Minority Leader David Hand says Democrats could be putting the state in poor fiscal shape for the next budget cycle. He said recent tax collections are not hitting projections.
I think we're going to be right back into the deficit potentially next budget because of all the spending we've done. So I think it's been really, to me, the story of the session has been spend all the money you can.
Democrats object to Hand's characterization. DFL Senator Dick Cohen of St. Paul says they put more money into the state's budget reserve and the state's economy is not faltering. He also says Hand and others didn't object to tax cuts this year.
Well, I thought they were the ones who said we should give it all back and not have any money at the bottom line, so you can't have it both ways.
The other person with a lot riding on the outcome of the session is Mark Dayton. He's seeking a second 4-year term in November, and voters will decide whether he and his fellow Democrats have been good for Minnesota, or if it's time for a change. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Today on the Daily Circuit, Kerry Miller talked with two leaders from the Minnesota Senate about the winners and losers in the final bonding bill that passed in the state legislature. Here's Kerry talking with Senator Jeff Hayden, a Democrat from Minneapolis, and Senator Roger Chamberlain, a Republican from Lino Lakes.
Senator Chamberlain, your party helped deliver to Governor Dayton a lot of what he wanted out of this legislative session. Big bonding bill, a tax relief, couple of bills on tax relief, the Women's Economic Security Act. He's going to campaign for reelection on all of that. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, we appreciate Governor Dayton and our DFL colleagues and Senator Hayden taking our advice and repealing some of those taxes they passed and giving some relief to Minnesotans. They passed the largest tax increase in Minnesota history with a 35% pay raise after that, and then the state office building, among other things. So it's about priorities for us. So they may try to do that, but they passed a large tax increase. We opposed that large tax increase, and then we supported repealing those B2Bs and giving the conformity to the
But I think you're missing my point, which is that he's going to be able to go out and campaign on issues that Republicans helped him pass. Mm-hmm. Women's Economic Security Act, the big bonding bill, some of that other tax relief. Mm-hmm. How comfortable are you with that?
Well, there the bonding bill, yes, some Republicans voted for it, but the bonding bill is a problem. It always has been a problem.
What's the problem with it, would you say?
Bonding, we need somebody to take leadership on this bonding issue. It's a feeding frenzy, a free-for-all, and we are not serving Minnesotans very well with this. The bonding should have been prioritizing what Minnesotans want, and that is roads. We got $85 million out of the $1.2 billion for roads. And Minnesotans said they want roads in this central corridor, not necessarily the central corridor. But we need leadership. We need to change the way we address this. All these things are nice. The Nicollet Mall is nice. Museums and theaters are nice. But what are our priorities? Our priorities should have been focusing on roads, the water system in southwest Minnesota, and a few other items, but we went a different direction. So we need to change how we handle bonding.
Senator Hayden, were the priorities mixed up, do you think, on the bonding bill?
No, I think we had great priorities on the bonding bill. But, you know, as you have indicated, we needed to have Republican support. So we had a nice priority in terms of what we needed to do. We did do the project of Southwest Minnesota that dealt with the water issue there. Mm-hmm. We have done bridges and roads. I think we need to do more. I think this regional transit system wasn't in the bonding bill this year, but we needed Republican support. So I think that you started to see it shape based on also what our friends in the GOP actually needed. And so with all due respect to my good friend, Senator Chamberlain, the priorities were shaped also by the GOP. And that's kind of the bonding bill that you saw because we needed a supermajority. I will also add that that's kind of how government should work. And you indicated up front that we had help with the GOP. We had GOP votes on a lot of these issues, and that's how it should work.
Senator Hayden, Senator Chamberlain didn't say this, but when he talks about priorities, the largest single project that got money out of the bonding bill was the state capitol renovation, $126 million. He says, comes in today to say, well, Minnesotans want roads. You put money into a project like that, didn't you, that you could have put into other items that average Minnesota voters would prioritize?
Well, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of people that come to the Capitol each and every year. It is where our democracy, it's the hub of our democracy. We had a well over 100-year-old building that was starting to crumble, literally starting to crumble. So I think that my friends on the right and both of us said that this monument needs to stand. It's not only where we work, it's not only the hub of democracy, but it really is the symbol of Minnesota. And so putting money into the Capitol and the grounds around it, we thought was a priority, and so did they.
Senator Chamberlain, you comfortable with $126 million in that bill for state capitol renovation?
Yeah, yes, we are. Republicans, our party, never denied that. Well, we had a proposal. We had a press conference a couple of weeks ago where we proposed a bonding bill that we thought made sense. And of that bonding bill, it still came to the same amount, $850 million, $300 million for roads, $220 million left over, plus a priority of the capital, fully funding the capital, and fully funding the water project in southwest Minnesota. So with that bonding bill, we could go to $850, $300 million in the roads, fully fund the capital, southwest Minnesota water system, and then have $220, $230 million left over to spend on discretionary items.
So when you said earlier, Senator Hayden, you
want
to say?
Well, Carrie, I do want to make note that 2 years ago when the GOP was in charge, They weren't able to pass a bonding bill unless they had the majority of Democratic votes. So they didn't do what we did this year. It's just to get enough to get it over. The majority of Democratic votes had to pass it. So the GOP, even 2 years ago, probably wouldn't have been able to pass a bonding bill if it wouldn't have been a majority of Democratic votes.
That's Kerry Miller and Senators Jeff Hayden and Roger Chamberlain on the Daily Circuit. Minnesota's construction firms shed tens of thousands of jobs because of the housing crash and the Great Recession. But construction is now the state's fastest-growing sector, and as Annie Baxter reports, employers now say they can't find enough workers, especially those with experience.
During the recession, you'd sometimes hear reports of eager job seekers forming lines out the door at job fairs. But now, in some industries, it's the employer's turn to be eager for a hire. At a construction job fair in St. Paul, Tim Haubrick, a project manager at Solid Employees LLC, was selling a job seeker on his firm's openings.
So would you require someone to have experience in that? Or?
No. No, we're looking for persons of all skill levels.
Haubrick's company supplies other firms with labor for projects like new home construction and remodeling. Those are parts of the economy that are booming again. And Haubrick says it's become much harder these days to find people with experience, like lead carpenters. That's one of the legacies of the industry's brutal downturn. The specialty trades, including carpentry, dumped 30,000 jobs in the housing downturn. Haubrick says after years of little or no work, many of the most seasoned workers gave up and moved on.
Some of them are not reachable. They've got their own business and or went in a completely different direction.
And some workers might not want to return to an industry paying less than it used to. Aaron Johnson is one of the owners of Castle Building and Remodeling in Minneapolis. He says during the recession, when workers were desperate, employers could get them at a discount.
We were actually able to get better people for a little cheaper there for a while because there just weren't enough jobs out there. So there were some guys that were pretty experienced that would take less of a wage than they would have made back in like 06 or 07, for example, just because they wanted a job.
At Castle, a non-union firm, lead carpenters made about $27 an hour before the downturn. That pay rate plunged to around $23 an hour in the recession's depths. On an annual basis, that means about $8,000 in lost income. Now, lead carpenter's pay has regained roughly half the ground, but it's still depressed. Representatives of several other non-union companies at the job fair said the trajectory of wages at their firms has been nearly identical to Castle's, and they generally agreed with Aaron Johnson that there's more catching up to do with pay.
Labor markets are notoriously slow to respond to changing market conditions. The price doesn't adjust on a day-to-day basis like the price of lettuce in the grocery store.
Steve Hine is the state's head labor market analyst. He says construction is undergoing a big shift. Employers held all the cards a couple years ago, but now it's much more of a workers' market. At the end of 2013, construction firms reported a record number of job vacancies. That means workers can be choosier about where they apply. Hine says to fill the vacancies, firms probably do need to boost wages, but they might also need to scale back their expectations about the skills they demand for the going wage.
You know, we have noticed in much of our survey work that the experience levels that are often required by employers trying to fill positions is considerably higher than it might need to be, certainly considerably higher than it has been in the past.
Hine says that might mean construction firms also have to ditch a common requirement that workers supply their own vehicles. That requirement has made it hard for Carquita Hall to find work. She got a carpentry certification last year, but hasn't landed a job in the field.
I was top in my class, so top 10 actually. So the only reason why I wasn't work ready was because I didn't have a reliable transportation source. So.
Hall traveled nearly 2 hours by bus to attend the construction job fair in St. Paul, hoping that making a personal connection could improve her chances of getting hired. The job fair did yield a few leads, and Hall's confident something will work out soon. She points to the huge number of construction jobs available. Annie Baxter, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
There is a growing speculation the Minnesota Timberwolves will be looking to trade star forward Kevin Love before he can leave as a free agent after next season. For more on that, Morning Edition's Kathy Werzer checked in with Howard Sinker, a digital sports editor for the Star Tribune.
What is this trade speculation based on, my friend?
Well, it's based on the fact that Kevin Love was not happy in 2012 when he was only offered a 4-year contract instead of the 5-year maximum that a team can offer one player. And what happens with the 4-year contract is you can opt out after 3 seasons, which would be next year. And Kevin Love's future with the Timberwolves has been an ongoing source of conversation around the NBA. And he was not happy when he was only offered 4 years. And I'm sure he's not happy with all of the uncertainty in the Timberwolves organization. And more than anything else, I think he wants to play for a winning team. And I'm not sure he has any assurance that that's going to be the case here for a few years.
What are team officials saying about this?
Team officials are saying what you would expect them to say, that Love is part of the team. We'll wait and see what happens. Glenn Taylor said, no, nothing's going to happen before the NBA draft next month. But things can change on short notice if the right team comes forward and makes the right offer for Love.
So do you think that the Wolves could get equal value for Love in a trade?
You wouldn't get equal value right away. The question is whether you can get a package of players and draft choices that would make the risk of trading Love worthwhile. You have to wonder, Love had a wonderful season in 2013-14, and the thing that people are asking is that the best you're going to get from him? And if you want to look for a parallel in Minnesota sports, you might consider Joe Mauer, who signed a huge contract after his career season and has played very well since then in many ways, but hasn't been durable and hasn't been the player that he was the season that he hit 29 home runs and was the American League Most Valuable Player.
But is it possible that he could re-sign with the Timberwolves?
It's always possible, but I think Love is going to want to see what the team is going to do to improve itself in the short term, starting with who's going to coach the team, starting with what other moves they might make. I'm not sure that anything that happened last season is anything that would cause him to want to stick around here for another batch of years.
But you have the upcoming draft of college players. The Wolves could draft some interesting players that might keep Kevin Love around.
Well, the draft over the years, without going into chapter and verse, has been historically terrible to the Timberwolves in terms of where they pick in the draft lottery. And this year, when the ping pong balls come down the chute, the Wolves have less than a 1% chance of getting the top draft pick, and I think they have a 2.2% chance of landing in the top 3. So the draft isn't as interesting a vehicle as who they might be able to acquire through trades and free agency.
Okay. So stay tuned. That's the bottom
line. Stay tuned. This is going to be an ongoing drama that's either going to be with us for another month or so or another year.
All right. Howard Sinker, have a good day.
You too, Kathy.
Kathy Werzer and Star Tribune digital sports editor Howard Sinker. I'm Phil Picardi. That's the Monday news on this NPR News Update. Tuesday news back here tomorrow.